This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I am Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are here until 11 o'clock, so feel free to get online. I know it's early. It's 9, and it's a little dreary out there, but we're here. We got up and dragged ourselves here in the studio. For you guys, happy to do it. 860-522-9842 is the number, and we will do our best to try to help you with whatever computer comment question you might have bothering you. Come on. I told you my machine was randomly rebooting and I couldn't figure out why. Guess what? It stopped randomly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
I got a feeling it was my VPN that finally updated or something like that. But it was just randomly black screen of deathing on me. Your system has encountered a problem and reboots. Just boop. But it's gone. That problem is gone.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it's like the problem that I never had, Dennis.
It's a problem that you never had that you suddenly did, and now you no longer have it.
Right, and I couldn't figure out why, because there was no error or nothing. It was just boop.
Well, it was telling you that there was a problem with your system, and it restarted.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that be the default statement?
Right, but that's not really an error message, right?
No. But we're here to help you guys with real problems, because that problem was not real, clearly. So feel free to get online. Of course, we're simulcasting on the old Facebooks and the YouTubes. If you want to follow us on YouTube, you can go ahead and subscribe. And of course, YouTube will throttle that because there is bumper music in here and somebody doesn't like the bumper music. So it will get throttled if you so it won't get as much wide coverage because of that. But you can still go ahead and subscribe. And then, of course, on the Facebook page, same thing over at Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network. We're there as well. And you can also podcast us, right? So we are all over Spotify and any of your favorite podcasts out there. You can go ahead and subscribe to us. Mm-hmm. We don't know why you would, but you can.
Well, apparently there are some people who do. So, yeah.
No, you guys are gluttons for punishment, I guess.
We appreciate it.
We do appreciate it. So as usual and customary, we have technology news we hope you can use, or at least meant to inform you. And what's going on out there, Dennis? What do you want to start
with? Well, we have a pretty serious story. It comes out of the U.S. Marshal Service.
I hear that's a cool show I was going to look at next, but go ahead. It's from the Yellowstone series.
Oh, yeah.
But I haven't gotten into it.
Casey is moving on to other things now. At any rate, the U.S. Marshal Service, apparently they have seized assets from criminals.
Well, law enforcement does that all the time.
Right. I mean, they do that. One of the types of assets that they occasionally have to seize is cryptocurrency.
Oh, really?
Okay. And they have a contractor, possibly others too, but at least one contractor is involved that holds on to this cryptocurrency for them or is involved in retaining it.
Because the marshals can't figure out how to do it? How does this crypto thing work? I agree.
Well, here's the thing: if the FBI takes custody of like stolen cars or something like that, what do you think they do? They rent warehouse space.
Yeah.
Well, the marshals are renting help from a contractor to save the cryptocurrency.
There's also lots of stories of asset forfeiture by these police these organizations where they actually take your cash and goes to the budget, of a sheriff's department. There's all sorts of issues with that.
Well, at any rate, they have a contractor that was involved in holding on to assets for them. One of the sons of somebody who worked for the contractor got involved with whatever was going on and stole $46 million worth of cryptocurrency.
The kid. Of the contractor.
Uh-huh.
So clearly the guy's working from his house and talking to somebody about what he's doing.
Yep.
And the kid's like, aha.
And the reason for this heist in the first place was, at least according to the article they've got here from the Register, it's something having to do with a public spat over who had control of the most cryptocurrency. He was trying to impress somebody, I guess.
The kid was?
Yeah.
So he just want, he decided to steal from...
from his father's company and the Marshal Service.
So, again, the question will be, is how long is he going to go to jail? But probably not very long.
No. It's white-collar crime. You're in for a day and you're out.
I don't know about the marshals, but I would convert it instantly to real, quote-unquote, real money. If there's people out there that want to pay the Marshal Service for that amount of money in crypto, you don't have to keep it in
crypto.
Well,
the whole problem with crypto that you steal is that the act of cashing it in and getting cash can sometimes draw attention to you.
That's why
a lot of the guys who do that will just hoard it again. So it stays as cryptocurrency just in their wallets instead of somebody else's.
But the Marshal Service.
Which is what makes this whole game so stupid.
Mm.
You're stealing something that you can't, that doesn't really exist in the first place, which is a problem.
Right.
But you're stealing it and then you're hoarding it because you can't afford to turn it into something else.
Yeah.
So you have to keep this nothingness as nothingness.
It spiked this week. I mean,
this is like a Hollywood comedy script.
I agree.
But it's real life, and I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I don't either, Dennis. And clearly the marshals don't either, because they can't do it themselves. They have a contractor doing it for them.
True.
All right, so that's an interesting story, listening to what your dad does and then stealing from your dad. That Thanksgiving is going to be rough. In topical news here, spyware disguised as emergency alert app is being sent to Israeli smartphones.
No.
So if you remember what they did to the Israelis, did to the Hamas folks with the whole beeper thing, and it all went boom. But that was done and designed way, way in advance.
That was like a 15-year in the making operation. Yeah.
Now, Hamas-linked attackers are dropping spyware disguised as emergency alert apps on Israeli smartphones via SMS messages, according to security researchers. So this is coming through Acronis, is taking a look at this. And, you know, the Israelis are pretty much aware of what's going on out there as far as the attacks that are coming at them. So I would hope they're not going to be fooled by these kind of things. But, of course, with all the emergencies that are occurring, they're going to get all sorts of messages.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story, and the reason I bring this up, is this is how hackers of any kind use some kind of thing going on to fool you or trick you or get you to act. And if anybody sends you anything via email, via text message, via even a call these days.
Oh, yeah. Phone calls are dangerous.
Outbound calling of any of these folks is ridiculous, and you shouldn't believe it. You have to always assume it's a scam. And then after that, you have to go ahead and reach out to the actual entity yourself without clicking on whatever they sent you to find out if it is a scam or not. So I'll tell you a little story. I spent about 10 years volunteering for my town on the water department. And I became the president at some point, but that's kind of a mandatory thing. You got to swap roles and you do your thing. I served my time. The reason I bring this up is we got an email from said water department saying your invoice is now coming electronically. Pay $97.
What?
Yeah. So being the skeptic, you can't just do that.
No.
Right? You just can't send me an email and say it's electronic, pay me now. You have to send a letter. You have to send something more real so that you can inform me that we are now going to be billed electronically. And normally, you have to opt into these things. You can't just decide the entire base of folks in your system are going to automatically want to pay via an electric system, which is a great idea to reduce costs, right? Who wants to send anything in the U.S. mail? I don't blame them.
Sure.
But in this case, they didn't really inform. I wasn't informed that this was going to happen, and it looks fishy, right?
Yeah, sure it would.
So I reached out to the town via the website there. I haven't heard back.
Oh, no.
I told them who I was. And I said, you guys can't do it this way. But this is the kind of stuff. When you start conditioning folks to just accept those types of emails, you are part of the problem.
Right.
You have to follow proper hygiene to at least make sure your customers opt in for something. You can't make them just do it. And B, you have to send something in a more real way before you just turn them over to be, now we're billing you via electronic system, you know, configure it now. And I'm not giving them a hard time other than that the process. You can't do it that way.
Right.
Because we can't trust
right.
it. The Israelis can't
Correct.
Trust a text alert from you. You know, you got things coming at you from your parking tokens and what have you from Easy Pass, all that kind of stuff. That's a common scam. Carolyn brought up a couple of scams that she's heard of recently with messaging going to iPhones.
Oh, yeah, iPhones, getting calendar invites.
Right, which has been going on forever.
Yeah.
You got to ignore those things. You've got SIM swapping happening with Google attacks too, which has been going on for a long time. All this stuff coming at you, just assume it's all bad. Don't ever click on these links. Don't ever act on them.
Yeah.
Unless you've initiated it. If you've initiated it, okay. But
if
it hasn't been initiated by you, then you should be skeptical. And I'm sure this is actually fine by the water department, but not the right approach.
No, definitely not.
So we'll put these stories up there for you guys to check out so you see we're not making them up. And you can read it yourself. And we have three lines open for you. Feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we will do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. We'll be right back. And we are back. Yes, it is International Women's Something. No, I'm just kidding. Just trying to get in trouble with Carolyn. We are honoring the women's out there. We do it every day. We'd be crazy not to. And but it is International Women's Day, I think, right, Carolyn? Tomorrow. Okay.
Tomorrow.
And then so we're celebrating all you ladies out there with whatever Carolyn picks that has to do with females. So feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. Another interesting story. This is kind of funny. A document foundation is urging the EU to ditch Excel lock-in for cybersecurity law consultation. So LibreOffice Stewart is saying the commission is undermining its own standards by asking for feedback via Excel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the document foundation has taken a swipe at the European Commission over its consultation on guidance for the EU Cyber Resilience Act because the feedback template is only available in Excel. The nonprofit behind LibreOffice says the commission's request for the stakeholder input published this week requires responses to be submitted using a template available only as an Excel spreadsheet, a format that is controlled by Microsoft. Dun, 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 and typically edited by Excel or compatible tools. So for an institution
LibreOffice is one of those. It's compatible.
Yeah.
You can open it with you know, LibreOffice.
Well, according to the Document Foundation, the template is only designed for Excel, and that's what they're complaining about. And they're saying, for an institution that has spent years promoting open standards, digital sovereignty, and reduced reliance on proprietary technology, the choice is to send the wrong signal, obviously. So, right, you got so clearly whoever's working in the Document Foundation is some kid or some intern doesn't realize the why of the organization.
Right.
And you just love these kind of articles. I mean, whoever sent it out didn't mean to go counter to whatever the Document Foundation's mission is, but it is, you know, it's kind of like having a party if you're trying to help Alcoholics Anonymous, but then you go to an after hours party, you know, 5 o'clock, you know, type of thing. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that is just so ridiculous. So we'll put this link up here for you. And I assume they went and spoke sternly to whoever sent out that email.
They're like,
Don't you know we want open source? Why are you saying Excel? All right, let's get to your calls. Stefan is out there from New Britain. Hey, Stefan, what's happening, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On the Facebook page, Eric and I were exchanging thoughts.
Probably Dennis.
Now,
yeah.
Dennis is more active than
Dennis,
me.
Sorry. Sorry. Dennis.
Yeah.
So somebody put up a link for the Internet Archive.
Right.
And it has versions of Windows 7. So here's the plan. Can I download that Windows 7 from my Windows 11 computer to a stick thumb drive?
Yes.
And then feed it into the dumpster found Dell Latitude E6410.
You can, theoretically. I don't know if it's going to work well, but you can do that.
Are you trying to get that old dumpster dive machine running again?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I managed to get to the previous owner's opening page.
Okay.
And it's password protected.
Of course.
Oh, and okay.
Since I don't know the password, and I'm not going to guess at it.
Well, it's either 123456 or 123456 7.
No, this guy was an AI professional, so I highly doubt it's that.
Gotcha.
And all I'm trying to do is get this thing to work again. And I mean, the power supply works. I went through all the other extraneous crap just to get to this guy's page, and it popped up, and it's asking for a password.
And it's a Windows 7 OS, is what you're saying.
It's a Windows 7 operating system.
Yeah, so now, I'm sure the link that Dennis gave you is legit.
Well, it's legit.
I know that.
It's legit. I mean, Internet Archive is going to vet the image, so it's legitimate. What I'm questioning is whether or not that particular drive image is going to be the right one to be able to install Windows 7 on this particular computer and have it work right. Plus, you'd have to have the product key for Windows 7. Mm. And I assume it's on the computer because that's what they used to do years ago. They would... The computer would come out of the factory with the product key on a sticker on it. So that should be right.
Right,
but
on the back of the machine.
I can't guarantee that that'll work, but at least it'll be safe.
Why don't I just flip the old Windows 7 over? There's a service tag.
Yeah.
Express service code and stuff like that, but I don't see a product.
You're kind of looking for a Windows sticker.
You're not going to look for the Dell sticker. You're going to look for a Microsoft sticker that's kind of what they call holographic, where it has a weird sheen on it, and then it'll have the product key.
Well, okay, hang on.
A weird sheen. I instantly went to Charlie Sheen when you said that. It's a weird sheen.
It has an Intel Core vPro i5 inside, and there's like to the upper right hand corner, there's a sheen to it, but that's it. Other than the Windows 7 sticker next to it.
Oh, that's it.
Well, yeah,
the Windows 7 sticker
That should have a product key for Windows 7.
Yeah, but there's no it. That's not on the Windows 7 sticker. It just says Windows 7, but the Intel Core.
Oh, it just says that it's made for Windows 7. Okay, I understand. All right,
you might be out of luck if you don't have that key.
Yeah.
Would it be stored inside the computer?
Maybe,
possibly.
That was early on,
right toward the right toward the end of the Windows 7 era. They were embedding the product key in the computer, and that's the way it's been ever since. But yeah, so it might work. I don't know. It might work without it. I can't tell you.
Do you have a copy of Windows 11 somewhere that you own?
No, it's just on my HP there.
All right, forget it.
As far as I know.
No answer there then. Mm. The other idea would be to just use a open source Linux operating system. Get geeky there, Stefan.
Yeah?
Yeah. At least I wouldn't have to put up with the Microsoft malfeasance all the time.
Yeah.
But if it's a Windows 7 computer, you need a version of Linux that's made for older equipment.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I've got that covered. It's called Lubuntu. It's Ubuntu, but with an L on the front.
We'll put a link. Don't be surfing for it.
Yeah, don't look for it. We're going to go to our link.
All right. We'll give you that chance. You have nothing else to do today. We're running out of time. You want to hold?
just really quick.
All right.
The
10
world
seconds.
Is being populated by stupid people because you don't steal from the U.S. Marshal Service and not expect to be caught.
I agree.
Especially in St. Martin. They went down there to get this guy.
Ay. Thanks, Stefan.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. All right. We are back. They shouldn't have to ask. That should be by default, right?
Yeah.
The fact that they had to write a song about it is not a good reflection on men.
No.
It is a good song, but they shouldn't have had to ask. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. And Dan in East Windsor is going to help Stefan. Dan, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Hey. Just a couple of things. For one thing, if you use a Dell OEM reinstallation DVD, you won't even need a product code.
Right.
You'll use the OEM activation method. And number two, I happen to have that very DVD that I'm more than willing to give Stefan. Because nothing I have still has Windows 7 on it anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, I will, and it's an OEM right from Dell.
Okay.
With one of my old machines. So
there you go, Stefan.
He can send me a PM. I actually commented on his post last week saying he could send me a PM.
Oh,
he didn't do
okay.
it.
Okay.
But
all
right.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for helping him. But yeah. I was thinking that he didn't have the OEM DVD because he's looking for it elsewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of an alternative place for
that
it.
Machine, so he wouldn't have the DVD.
Right, of course not.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, there's a helper for you if you want to get something old.
Now, that's the community of listeners.
Yeah.
This is what we love.
Yeah, definitely. That can work out. So feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. As you might have heard, I went to a confab in Orlando.
Oh.
Yes, that's where geeks go, pasty white computer geeks go, to sit inside all day and listen about IT things. I think I got 20 minutes of sun. But aside from that, I learned something kind of interesting that I figured I'd share with you because it's not like it's a state secret or anything like that. Marketing websites. Right, everyone was trying to figure out how to find more customers, and so whether you're out there as a small business or you're trying to figure out how to improve your website traffic, basically, Google search is dead. You know, any kind of keyword advertising, you're paying for any kind of special word, like let's say you sell cookies and you want to put in and search for best cookie shop or what have you. Those searches are dead. It's almost you have a better shot of winning the lottery than actually having the search pop up and show your site if you search for cookies or whatever it might be, right? Because basically that's a very common name, and so that's been dead for quite a while. Long tail searching, another thing where you might actually search for a very odd type of cookie. Let's say you're the best maker of some sort of weird cookie. Name a weird cookie, like some sort of gluten-free, celiac available, purple macadamia. I don't know what it could be, but if the more specific on the long tail search there, you might actually get a hit because you're the only one doing it for that particular person. And yes, it's less people who want that type of weird cookie, but you're going to get that person.
Right. You're more likely to make the sale.
Right. So, but again, ad searches and keyword searches is dead. When you try to, so basically this guy demonstrated the fact that the next step, just so you guys know, is AI-based searches.
Right.
So you have to work to improve your website and how AI will see you. And that is a whole trick. And just for for you guys to know about it, the way this guy described it, he's been doing it for like 20 years. And I'm not going to do it justice because I didn't give the presentation. I saw it 3 days ago. The point of it was to make sure your website is understandable by AI to the point where if some ding-dong put a search in Grok and asked for the best cookie shop in, Hartford, Grok would say, by default, Amy's Cookies, of course, right? And you have to feed your website with enough information that an AI will send that person to that search. Now, people are not using AI to search that way that much. That's why it's kind of like literally you're at day two of this thing. But the more just goes and changes. It used to be like 10% of people were using or 5% were using AI for searches. That's already in 1 year like triple or quadrupled, and it'll keep going up faster and faster as people start using AI. And if your site's not ready for it, you're going to miss out. But I'll tell you right now, SEO, Google Ads, don't even bother. I don't care how good you are. Don't even bother. He did a demo that blew us away in that he asked the actual search engine. He just did it with Gemini, you know, who did SharePoint migrations. Best SharePoint migrations, New York City, or some, not best, but SharePoint migrations, New York City. And he goes, it's a live demo. I may not come up number one. He did. So keep it, you know, it's a cool idea. You have to work really hard, though, to feed the AI so it thinks of you as the expert. It's going to be a lot of data you get to put in your system so that it scrapes it and sees you as the expert. So a little inside information that I gleaned while I was at the confab. Lots of other scary things out there. Holy moly. If you don't have any kind of ITDR watching your Microsoft 365 accounts for your businesses, 85% of the attacks are now ITDR based. They're coming in after your mail, and you need to make sure those tenants are monitored and watched. If you don't even know what the word ITDR means, you probably are in trouble. That's the way the bad guys are going in. And if you don't have that in place, we saw some amazing demos and amazing technologies out there that can shut it down rather fast. But if you don't have it, you're just an accident waiting to happen. And plenty of other things, too. But I digress. Anything you want to bring up there, Mr. Dennis, as far as technology talk?
Yeah, we talked about the Marshall Service getting taken for $46 million worth of cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Well, the FBI had a little problem this week.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, their surveillance and wiretapping systems were hacked.
Compromised.
Something happened.
Right.
They haven't really been too forthcoming about it other than the fact that there was something. I guess some of the more recent stories have said that it might have been the Chinese.
So basically what we've seen even with this Iranian war here that's going on and what the Israelis did to hack their surveillance, their camera systems all over the state of Iran, we shouldn't be shocked here. We've talked about this salt typhoon thing going on with China and how they're going after our infrastructure. I would not be surprised in the same way the Israelis knew every road on Iranian soil. They knew exactly where they wanted to get their targets. Mm-hmm. They watched them for a long time to figure out their patterns, figure out who their associates were, right? To do this.
Apparently they've been in those camera systems for a long time, and they've actually constructed an AI operation that was constantly watching these, collecting data about who is going where and where they're going to be.
Yeah.
They even had two different AIs. Right. One was just tracking everything. The other one was trying to predict motion and where somebody's going to be tomorrow or the next day.
Right. So to have a story about the FBI surveillance systems being compromised by a state actor like China should not surprise you in the least.
Right.
We've been talking about this for a very long time, not to scare you, but there are state actors in all of our systems right now. I would contend without it's not even a hard prediction to make. They are involved in our infrastructure, our water systems, our electrical systems. They already told you all about it, called Salt Typhoon. They told you they were in our communication systems. We now can't use certain types of technology by Huawei and all those other types of companies that are coming out of China. But a lot of our stuff is made in China. So how do you get away from this? Mm-hmm. There's cameras you can't use for surveillance. We were talking about that even at the conference as well. There's some security folks that were there that were like, we don't even know if the cameras have the chips inside that are actually okay or not. So there's technology out there that folks are using to actually scan the whole network to try to find. So the brand could be XYZ brand and it could be allowed, but the inner chip could be the one that's not allowed. And you may not know that as a security guy.
Right. You as a security guy, even the companies that are reselling the security equipment may not know about the exact chips in particular pieces of equipment.
And again, if you're putting this stuff up, the Chinese don't even have to kind of figure out how to get in. They're already in.
Right.
So this shouldn't be a very big surprise for the FBI. The other issue is, did they use any cameras from Huawei? I don't know. That would be embarrassing. But that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. I mean, it was only a little while ago that we said that we couldn't use Kaspersky antivirus.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago.
It's Russian. Are we shocked? Why would it take so long for you to figure that out? Do you want Russian antivirus on your government systems? I mean, come on. Does it take a rocket? It doesn't take a rocket science to figure out you don't want that. So just based on what we're seeing in this current conflict and what was done with technology, just imagine, it's a failure of imagination to know what's happening right now as far as actors, state actors going after us. They've got a lot of time, lots of people, and we've bought all their cheap crap, and we've set it up and configured it with password of admin. Right?
That's true.
It's all set up and running that way. And so if we don't think these state actors aren't looking at our systems in the same way that happened over in Iran, we're crazy. And that's what should be concerning everyone. We need to work on figuring out ways to detect that and figuring out ways to kick them out, and also to have a good way to detect whether or not the technology is something we should be banning. I mean, even, was it TP-Link that we were talking about recently?
Yes.
That they've been banned by the U.S. government?
I believe so, yes.
Those are the kind of things, but they've already got probably millions and millions of routers out there sitting in people's networks, doing who knows what. So, not trying to scare you or anything like that. Just trying to connect the dots for you a little bit as to what could happen. You know, again, I'm not the sharpest tack in the drawer. I'm just talking based on what I'm seeing being used, and then based on the stories we have, you can easily make that logical connection that we probably aren't. Especially if the FBI is getting hacked, those guys know what they're doing.
True.
Right.
True. The FBI is the agency that went around the country modifying everybody's exchange servers just a few years ago.
Right. Trying to prevent
Chinese attacks. Incursions. Yeah.
You're exactly right. And that was, again, there's a little controversy there because they didn't ask before they fixed it. They kind of got into your server in the same way the yeah. bad guy was.
Right. They used the same exploit just to go in and get rid of it.
Right. Which was, I'm okay with it because they're trying to help you. It's kind of like you left your front door open. They walked it. The police officer went up and locked it and closed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, those are the same folks that are doing that. But then to find that they're impacted like this, it just shows you how vulnerable we are. Feel free to get online. Four lines wide open for you guys. 860-522-9842 is the number. Wide open. Clearly all the computer problems have been solved.
Yeah, I guess everybody's heading to Hartford for the St. Patrick's Day parade.
I didn't know all of our callers were Irish. But I guess they might have been.
Well, on St. Patrick's Day, this isn't St. Patrick's Day, but they're having the parade. So
yeah.
On St. Patrick's Day, everybody is Irish, right?
No, fair enough. Yeah. I guess you're right. Any excuse to drink a Guinness at 8 in the morning. We're going to step out for a quick break and get back to your calls. I'll be right back. All right. We are back. Still phone lines wide open for you guys. Here to help you out if you have any issues. Otherwise, we'll continue with our technology news you can use. Anything you want to bring up there, Dennis?
Yeah. There is a court case here in Connecticut that is going to reach the state Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
It involves... Well, the original case didn't involve AI.
Okay.
But over the course of the lawsuit going through all of its different gyrations as it goes through the court system, it did become an AI problem.
Okay.
Because some of the briefings that were filed contained AI hallucinations.
Yeah.
And now, in addition to resolving whatever the case was to begin with that started all this, the court has to address how to deal with the hallucinations that were introduced into it.
So you're telling me that this is a retrial or some sort of
I don't know if it's a retrial. It's just, you know, a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And during the course of it, some AI hallucinations got inserted into some briefings. And research group kind of figured it out and notified the court system. And now, on top of everything else, they got to deal with that. And
they probably used AI to figure it out, too. Hey, yeah. Is there any hallucinations
maybe,
in here?
Well, yes. But one of the story that I've got about it is from the Hartford Courant. And one of the things that they include in it is the fact that it isn't just lawyers who are parties to cases that are throwing AI hallucinations into them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes judges are writing opinions or orders that contain AI slop. Yep.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I know AI is helpful, yeah, for folks, but you're a judge. We don't want AI.
I don't know what to tell you. It's becoming comical.
It is. And scary.
And it's scary. And another thing that was brought up in the course of this article is that there are legal experts that are saying, you know, it's one thing for, you know, a lawyer in a case to gin up a hallucinated, maybe a case precedent that, mm-hmm, supports your position.
Right.
And that doesn't really exist, but it got invented.
Well, the prompt itself is probably going to infer that they're going to do that.
Right.
I can't imagine the prompt would do that.
What these experts are saying, it's one thing for your AI to gin up a precedent that helps your case,
mm-hmm,
but it could be doing that at the expense of finding perhaps even better precedents that do a better job of supporting your case that,
right,
you didn't find out about because you were getting your AI slop over here,
right,
instead of doing genuine legal research and finding a better,
right,
precedent for your case.
Using the old LexisNexis the way,
yeah,
you're supposed to.
Right.
Yeah, again, is the outcome all they're looking for? But to have a judge actually leverage AI for an opinion? That is just not what we want.
Uh-huh.
You can, I guess, if you want to have it summarize your opinion, that makes sense. But to actually have it create the opinion or help you with any kind of output of the opinion, I don't know. I mean, it's what you think, not what the AI thinks you should think.
Right. I mean, when you're the judge, you are the person making the decision.
Yeah, if it's the case that we can have AI do this for us, we won't need you, right? We can just have a computer
decide.
Well,
it should be what your orders and your opinions should be all from you.
Yeah, all from you.
There should be no AI involved because it should be you.
The only AI if you
want. And what you've decided, what you are ordering, what are your instructions to people?
If you want AI to do something for you, like take a memo, that's one thing. But
yeah,
send an email.
Good for dictation. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. But
not to actually do this. And that's scary. I would think, I mean, the moment that becomes a thing and the moment we actually have, that's like, again, we're trying to work in balls and strikes in baseball, right? Just having to know where the actual strike zone is, not having an actual umpire make that decision. If we get to the point where AI is deciding cases, A, we'll save a lot of money on judges. but B, I guess that'd be a utopia we get to some point, maybe not in my future, but at some point that'd be fine by me. But do you want a 0 and 1 device to coldly decide based on here's a law, here's what you're going to be sentenced to, you're guilty or not? I mean, oof, that's pretty dystopian, right?
I agree.
Right now, if it ever gets perfected where it actually works, like remember Star Trek? The computer can never be wrong, and it is not wrong, and it cannot tell a lie. It was like the perfect computer. It was like they had thought about this going forward. It will be perfect and correct. It does not tell a lie, right?
It does not tell a lie.
We're not there yet.
But I am lying. Yes, Norman.
That's right. You are beautiful. She is ugly. I am exactly the same. Smoke comes out of his ears. Let's go to you. We're not there yet. Let's go to Bob in Hebron, who's got a real question. What's happening, Bob?
Hi, guys. Hi. I just got a cross-connect cable. I was hoping I could just plug this into two computers, and then I could just, like, zip-zap. I could just transfer files back and forth between them. But I guess it's more complicated than that, and I'm just wondering the simplest way to use one of these things.
Well, here's the issue. When you just have one cable in between two computers, there's nothing giving them IP addresses.
Right. Yeah.
So what you have to do is go to each computer and assign an IP address to each one.
Is it a network cable, Bob, or some sort of USB?
It sounds like he's got a crossover cable. Ethernet cable.
Is that what you got?
USB-C to USB-C charge
and sync
cable.
Charge and sync.
All right. Well, charge and sync cable is probably going to require some kind of software that will perform the transfer.
It needs to be told what to do.
Yeah, it needs to be told, hey, that USB connection is to another computer and you're going to move data instead of whatever.
How was it sold? Was there any kind of software or manual with it there, Bob, as far as what you should be using to do that?
Nope.
Did you just pick up a cable that happened to have two different connections and plug them on either side and say, I'm going to try this?
Yeah, I bought this out of Best Buy. And features, transfer files quickly with 10 gigabyte per second super speed technology, blah, blah, blah.
Fair enough. Okay, so depends on what you're transferring to and from. So that statement is true if I want to plug in, a smartphone.
I'm just going between two HP laptops.
I know. But if I want to plug in a smartphone, that cable is going to transfer that data no problem, right? Because it's going to act like the smartphone's an external hard drive. Unfortunately, Windows doesn't just decide to act that way. If you plug two cables into either machine like that, like Dennis said, there has to be software to kind of explain to the computer what we're trying to do here. And have you found anything? Like the old Link used to be out there.
Yeah. There's also something that I'm reading about called Easy Transfer, but I don't know if Windows includes that anymore.
Right.
In the Mac world, they have a migration assistant.
Well, believe it or not, that was part of the confab in Orlando. Windows includes all sorts of old legacy stuff that is still allowed on their operating system, which should not be by default.
Correct.
So it probably does still have it there, but... Yeah, it's not that simple, Bob. Most likely they were expecting you to use this cable not between computers, unless there was some graphic of two computers on there, like I highly doubt. They're expecting you to use it for transferring files, most likely from a mobile device to the computer as a hard drive, if I had to guess.
Let's see.
I doubt it was said to connect two computers, but go ahead.
So, works with smartphones, tablets, and other devices that use USB-C connector.
There you go. Yeah.
So both my computers have.
Yeah. Fair point,
USB-C
Bob.
Connectors.
Their marketing department didn't really. They should have added. It would have been like PCs, smartphones, tablets. Other devices would not be like a computer. Other devices would be like a smartphone or a tablet, not a computer, per se.
Is there any such thing as the cable out there where I can just plug it into the two computers and then I can just go from one file directory to another just the way
you could get what I was referring to, which is what I thought you had mentioned you had, which is an Ethernet crossover cable.
Yeah.
And then you would do what I was describing originally, which is you set a static IP address at either end, and then you set up file sharing. I'm seeing that EasyUS has an easy transfer program.
EasyUS. Chinese company.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Be careful. But they have a free utility that will work with that USB cable.
Oh.
So he should be able to go get that.
We'll put a link for it. But remember, it's Chinese software.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, it's all that I can find. It's free.
Yeah.
When you say be careful, how do I be careful?
Use at your own risk.
Use it at your own risk. And when you're done with it, remove it.
Yeah.
Man. I think I'll just stay with the old fashioned either use a thumb drive
there you go.
Back and forth or email or back
that can work.
Forth. I mean,
Don't email it. No. Come on.
Sneakernet. Use a thumb drive or a hard drive.
Or an optical drive.
So I can use this cable to wrap a
You can. We'll be right back.